It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 365, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Dave Rose's legacy will always be connected to the Lone Peak Three. Matt and I debate whether recruiting three players from the same school made sense and how this ultimately affects Rose's coaching legacy. Also on the show, Jalen Hall is an athlete, so is Sione Takitaki, and 1,000-yard running backs are overrated. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and listen to us right now. I bought my tickets for Avengers Endgame this morning. We're set to go, Matt, on Friday afternoon. Do you have your tickets yet?
Man, I'm way behind. I'm a loser.
You won't find them now. You're too late. They're all gone.
So when is it coming out?
It's stupid now. They say Friday, April 26th, but it really comes out.
But it really starts Thursday.
Yeah. Right. And we're going Friday. We're going Friday. So, yeah. So, man, it's got to get on it. The AMC website and app crashed today. They couldn't handle
it. Of course it did.
They couldn't handle the volume.
Well, you know what happened.
What?
Thanos snapped.
Half the movie sites disappeared. Hey, you just spoiled Infinity War for our listeners. Nice job, buddy. What a spoiler movie.
I didn't. You're the one who explained my comments. I'm a no-spoiler zone.
But I am going to go. I'm no Andre Hutchins, but I am going to go to Shazam this Thursday on its opening night.
Shazam!
So there you go. There you go, Matt. Well, let's stop with this movie small talk and go right into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. You know, I'm going to give you a pass on that week one because you've been struggling with a cold. So
wow, that was not a pleasant experience for anybody.
This is my impersonation of what just happened. Cougars in the News!
That wasn't even fun.
Didn't sound fun. Well, actually, it kind of was fun for me. So.
I'm just glad I survived it. All right, so the Cougars are in the news.
Cougars are in the news. Men's volleyball, 4 straight losses. Their record fell to 12-10, still ranked 11th in the land. Finished the season this week at Grand Canyon. They did beat Grand Canyon earlier this season in Provo 3-1. It's hard to call it free fall. Some of these losses came against really good teams, but not a good way to finish the regular season for the Cougars.
Now, it doesn't feel solid, right? It doesn't feel good.
No. Baseball improved their record to 7-2.
And they're ranked top 25, baby.
Yep, top 25 after sweeping St. Mary's, which is awesome. They play Utah tonight. That game actually might be going on as we speak. And then they're at San Diego this week. And San Diego is the alma mater of current Major League All-Star Chris Bryant, I believe. Or I just made that up and he's not.
Somebody just made it up. That's fine.
Somebody in the pros is from San Diego.
It's Tony Gwynn, someone. I don't know.
That's right. No, that's San Diego State.
I know, I've just seen if you take the bait.
Stop it.
And you did.
And I love Tony Gwynn.
Steven Strasburg. Nope. Also San Diego State.
San Diego State. I think it's Chris Bryant. Should I look that up right now? Will that be exciting for the listeners?
People love to listen to you clickety-clack on your keyboard as you look up alma mater of Chris Bryant.
Yeah, let's look at Chris Bryant Wikipedia because that's always true.
Wow. I got University of San Diego.
Yeah. I did. I was correct.
I typed in Chris Bryant alma mater, and the first thing that pops up is the link to the University of San Diego website.
Good job, University of San Diego, with their search engine optimization. Good job, guys.
That's great.
Way to go.
I think they're listening to our conversation.
They probably are. Everyone's listening. Siri's listening. All right. Matt, Jalen Hall made some highlights this week. Did you see those?
So he's a decent baseball player.
So he made an amazing catch up against the wall. Though, to be fair, I don't know that he took the best route, but he ended up making up for that, making a jumping, leaping catch to get it. And then I think in that same game against St. Mary's, there was a ball that the guy on first base kind of hesitated because he thought he might catch it. then it bounced, and then Hall threw him out from center field at second base. It was
pretty
amazing.
Awesome.
It was amazing. We'll get to Hall later, but there are reasons to be excited about this guy's athleticism.
He's an athlete.
Yes, for sure.
He's got skills, as they say.
Yes. Speaking of athletes, let's talk about Sione Takitaki.
Let's talky-talky about talky-talky.
Oh, my gosh. That was terrible.
That was awful.
I'm not giving you a pass on that.
I gave you a pass on the Cougars in the news, but I'm not giving you a pass on this one.
Talky-talky did not actively participate in BYU's pro day, though he certainly could have been the star. But he has been at NFL.com projected in one of their latest draft projections to be a third round draft pick. Matt, are you buying or selling Sione Takitaki as a third round NFL draft pick?
I'm buying it. I'm going to go ahead and buy this.
You're buying it.
Yeah, I think there's precedent for this, for him to show up, turn out at the combine, put teams on notice, and then get drafted somewhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he will. I mean, we've been saying for a while, we think it's probably somewhere in that third, fourth, fifth round range, right? And it really, once you get to that range, a lot of that has to do with what people think on where they're going to fall, right? Right. I've got a third round pick. I've given him a third round grade, but I think I can get him with my fourth round, right? So I'm going to get this other guy who I don't think is going to be around the next time I get to pick, right? That being said, I think Takitaki will go high. The pro day was pretty lackluster outside of that. Matt, Corbin Kaufusi is probably number two of the Cougars. Buying or selling that Corbin Kaufusi hears his name called during the 3 or 4 days or whatever, how long the draft is nowadays.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sell that.
I am too. I think if he had ended the year healthy and had been able to participate in all this offseason stuff, I think this could have been a late round 5, 6, 7 guy, right? Now I think he's a rookie free agent type of guy where somebody's going to take a flyer on him.
Unfortunately, the Alliance of American Football will no longer be an option for people like him.
So what do you think about the Alliance for American Football?
Well, since they're folding tomorrow, I'm really not sure what else there is left to think.
You have your shirt, though.
I did get my shirt before they stopped selling memorabilia several weeks ago. But yeah. It's apparently this is a really hard thing to make work.
Yeah, it is a hard thing to make work, and they blame the NFL for not letting them use backups, but the NFL was never going to let them use backups.
There's zero incentive for them to do that.
Right.
Those guys have put in a full season of practice.
Right.
Yeah, they're not. They need to heal up.
Yeah, for sure. So not anything surprising. Matt, other people participated in the pro day. I mean, Tanner Mangum participated. I mean, is Tanner going to get a shot somewhere?
Maybe. Maybe somebody decides to bring him into camp. You know, teams are always looking for quarterbacks to come into camp because you and not even necessarily to really look at, right? Sometimes they just want another guy who can throw the football in there to help with drills and reps and stuff for other players and for, you know, different layers of position groups and stuff like that. So, you know, and I don't mean this I'm not saying this in a pejorative way at all, but I mean, Jake Heaps was in and out of the Seahawks camp, you know, for a handful of years, right?
Right.
But they weren't looking to sign Jake Heaps. They were bringing him as a camp quarterback. So, you know, could Tanner Mangum get into a situation like that where somebody brings him in and then maybe if he impresses the right people, he gets a shot? Yeah, maybe. But am I going to be shocked if somebody signs him to a contract and keeps him through the end of the summer? No, that wouldn't shock me. I'd be a little bit more surprised if he lasts into September.
Yeah, for sure. So, Matt, let's just play a little game here. Of the players on BYU's current roster, who do you think would be a Who do you think's the top draft prospect? Doesn't matter year or how far out they are. Is anybody popping to mind?
I'm going to say Bushman. Bushman? Is that crazy?
No, I don't think it's crazy. I'm going to throw... Okay, how about this? We'll do it this way. I'm going to throw a few names at you, and you tell me yes, no, maybe. Okay?
Okay,
NFL draft prospects.
All right, what do you got?
Recently returned missionary Chaz A'u. I'm doing this alphabetically, by the way.
I'm gonna say yes.
I'm going to say maybe, but I think we're both in the same boat. Tight end Matt Bushman.
I'm saying yes, obviously, because he was the one that I gave you, man.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, as well. How about offensive lineman James Empey?
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say maybe.
Yeah, I could go maybe on that one.
Go maybe. How about defensive back Diane Gonwalaku?
No.
I'm
going
to say no, but I think he could get there, though. Could get there with another good year. How about quarterback Zach Wilson?
Maybe.
I'm going to say no at this point, but maybe I should be saying maybe. Maybe I should be saying maybe. That's very...
Call me maybe.
Let's see. How about offensive lineman Tristan Hodge?
Maybe.
What about... let's see. Going through the list here. What about kicker Skylar Southam?
No.
Okay. What about kicker Jake Oldroyd?
Also no.
All right. You're being just negative about kickers. What about wide receiver Gunnar Romney?
He's a definite maybe.
I would put him in that maybe category.
It's hard to go all in on somebody who's that early in their career, right?
Yeah, it is.
Which maybe that was your hesitation on Chaz Ayu, but
yeah, I would say that. How about I thought he was a given, but I think this has changed substantially. Defensive back Troy Warner.
Maybe.
I'm going to say maybe. When he's healthy, he seems to be he's very good. So, but
he's only got this one year to prove himself, and then he's just got to show up. Right, he's got to really right. The postseason
gotta be healthy.
Stuff. He's got to really crush it.
Yeah, I mean, but obviously he's a incredibly good athlete. So anyway, all right, man, let's talk about basketball. We'll come back to spring football and stuff. Obviously, the big news over the last couple of weeks, we covered and had a whole show, most of it dedicated to the retirement of Coach Dave Rose. And you look at that and you say, okay, big things happened there. I don't know that a whole lot has come out since about why. I think he was pretty. I mean, I would say in that exit press conference, he was pretty like open about where he was emotionally and mentally and why he decided to stop, right?
So, yeah.
So do you take that at face value, that he just was kind of worn out, maybe a little bored, and it was time to move on? Or do you think there's something beyond what would be said in a press conference?
No, I think that's kind of it. Like, could you be a little bit more blunt about it, right? And could he just say, look, I'm burnt out. I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, but nobody's going to stand up at a press conference and say that.
But he was pretty close
to saying that. That's pretty much what he said, right? Yeah, you've got to be emotionally, what did he say? Mentally, emotionally, and physically bought in or something. You know, and then kind of said, I'm not any of those things right now. And so it's time for me to not do this. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much more clear you can see. Now, is there some other weird thing going on behind the scenes with the – is it the players? Is there – you know, it's the administration clearly wasn't trying to push him in that direction.
No, I think they just signed him to an extension after there were NCAA sanctions.
I wonder if the administration kind of saw this coming and was trying to figure out a way to convince him to stay just a little bit longer with the extension. Like, hey, look, we're going to dump a bunch of money on your head. Just please stay for a couple more years because we think we're close. We think we're getting somewhere here.
Yeah, could be.
You know, or we don't know what the plan is to follow you up, right? So but do I think there's like some huge other thing behind this and he was totally dodging the real issue? No.
No, I don't either. Well, Andre Hutchins has a theory. He tweeted at us, and you can tweet at us, @BYU_RightShout. And he tweeted at us from @AC_Hutchins. And by the way, Andre, I'm going to get to go. Oh, and he also tweeted at you last week saying he could help you with your cinematic tastes, Matt. He could help you.
We're going to refine my cinematic palette.
Yes, we're going to refine that palette of yours.
That sounds great. Sounds like a great experience. I look forward to being part of it.
Yeah, yeah, as you should. So his theory, he says, of Dave Rowe's reason I'm retiring this year instead of next, Childs told Rose that he's leaving early. Childs decides to stay for his senior season. Rose gives it one more go. Am I close? Matt, again, I'm going to do buy or sell. Are you buying or selling Dave Rose retiring this year instead of next year because Yoli Childs decided not to return to BYU basketball?
I'm selling because I think Rose actually, I think Rose had decided to go before this season was over. I partially wonder if it was the end of last season. He thought about it and said, no, I'm going to give it one more go. And this season we just got was the one more go.
Yeah, I mean, am I going to be shocked if some point in the future we find out that a conversation like this happened either internally or that's the way Rose was thinking? No, but I don't think that's what happened. I mean, a couple of people had said this during the year, and I don't know if it was true or not, but, you know, guys, people were commenting that he seemed disconnected. And, you know, if Childs come back next year, say if Childs were to come back, what's the upside for Rose to stay another year?
I don't see anything here that shows that
next
year.
Third place in WCC, I mean.
Yeah, even with Childs coming back, right? Like, what does Rose look at and think, oh, what? Like, this is going to be the year we make that last deep run I never got to make? I mean, that's not the shape of the program right now. That's just not where we're at.
Well, apparently people want us to keep talking about the Lone Peak 3, Matt, because we got a couple questions on that. So we're going to talk about the Lone Peak 3.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it?
That's right. So Wade Hillam on Facebook, and if you want to talk to us on Facebook, you can do it at facebook.com/riseandshout. Wade says this, interesting article, he says, in ESPN about the rosters of the Final Four teams and the type of recruits on those teams. He's of in these rosters, they listed how many 100 ESPN 100 commits are on the roster of the Final Four teams, okay? Michigan State 6 top 100. Auburn 5, Virginia 5, interestingly enough Texas Tech 0. Okay.
Yeah, where's Texas Tech coming from?
So BYU on this year's team had 3. Nick Emery in 2013 and the Yoli Childs in 2016 and TJ Oz in 2014. Could have been 4 with Eric Mika because he was a top 100 guy in that same class with Nick Emery in 2013. Okay, so could have had up to 4 guys, not to mention Elijah Bryant left as well, could have been all part of this team. So Wade's question is kind of this. What did you expect Coach Rose and his staff to do with those players in their backyard? Obviously, he's agreeing that the whole thing was a disappointment. I've heard some of your rantings about the Lone Peak 3. I think he's talking about you because I've been pretty adamant that I think Rose had no choice but to recruit all of these guys. But what would you guys honestly have done in that situation? Okay, now I'm going to add this. Alex Cook emailed us. You can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Alex had a similar thing. He said, you know, he's heard people say that the Lone Peak 3 ruined BYU basketball, focused too much on the Utah Valley recruits. But he says this, if BYU did not recruit them, failing to get a 4-star recruit so close with two of them having family connections to BYU. Heck, and he points out that some people were really annoyed that Rose let Frank Jackson go, right? Call it the Lone Peak 4 when Duke came calling. What will you think, basically, there's two questions embedded in both these guys' statements or questions. The first one is, didn't Rose have to recruit these guys? And the second one is, what would it look like if you'd had all those guys together on the team? So we've talked a little bit about the second one, but we'll do it again. The first one, Matt, is I'm going to throw the gauntlet down on you because the last couple times we've talked about this, you have absolutely said, like, they didn't recruiting these three guys was a bad idea from the beginning because getting three guys from the same school, yada, yada, yada. I'm going to come back right at you and say the same thing I've said this whole time. I don't know what Rose was supposed to do except recruit these guys. I don't know what he was supposed to do, not just pick two of the four and recruit Jackson and Mika and let Emery and Haas go. I mean, I don't know. I think he had to recruit all these guys, and whoever came.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you got to balance out the players that you're going after, and you've got to try and build chemistry. Like, I don't know who he picks to not recruit. I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, who I would keep on that list or whatever. But and this is an eternal game of what ifs, right? So even if I could get in my DeLorean, go back in time, and convince Rose to do this differently. And let's just say, even if he does do it differently, and even if I'm right, and this team runs to the Sweet 16, right, this newly formed non-Lone Peak 3 team makes it to the Sweet 16, we'll still be having the same conversation, right? Because, you know, Emery would be somewhere else, or somebody, you know, one of these players would be somewhere else, and we'd say, oh, well, if he would have gotten all of those guys, we would have been in the Final Four, right? It's all second-guessing to some extent. At the same time, though, I'd rather be in the situation where we have some runs that get us into the tournament, and you'd be asking yourself the what-ifs there than the what-ifs we're facing today.
I disagree, man. We had a chance at a Elite Eight level team, and he took the shot and it missed. I'd much rather have that than a run of, well, maybe we possibly make the tournament, which is kind of what happened, right? But you go after those guys, put together that team, you had a shot. It didn't work. It, you know, you never actually got them all together, really, to play. So it was unfortunate. But, I mean, these were all top 100 recruits playing, you know, within miles of the campus. I think they've relied way too much on local recruiting, and there's good articles and comments about that that we don't have to dig into here, and that is for sure. These guys aren't those, though, right? There were top 100 recruits recruited by a lot of people, including schools with potentially better programs than we have, right? And these individuals chose to come to BYU anyway. So I think recruiting them was the right thing. It didn't work out. Just because it didn't work out doesn't mean you get back in your door and do it different, because you've got to take the shot, right? I mean, you had a shot. You and I talked about this. We thought, you know, if all these guys hit their potential, this could be one of the best BYU teams ever. And instead, we're sitting here going, what the heck happened? And we just didn't make the tournament the last 4 years.
Yeah, but the big thing for me, and this is kind of, and I've said this before, is that there's not, and maybe there is, maybe somebody can point this out to me, but I don't think there's good precedent for bringing that many players at the same time out of the same high school and having that kind of success. Now, I understand it's a little bit different because they were right in BYU's backyard. They were guys with family ties to the program. They were LDS kids. You know, we had all of those. They checked all the weird BYU boxes, right? And so it's a little bit harder. In the case of the guys that ended up coming, right? You know, it's like a Frank Jackson decides, you know, he's going to go somewhere else or whatever. But in the case of the guys that ended up coming, you know, there were those types of connections involved. And so I understand that, but there's not a good precedent for what program does that? Like, if there were three top 100 players within the backyard at Duke, like, do you think Coach K is going after those three guys? Now, I understand it's, and to some level, it's kind of a ridiculous question. I understand that, right?
I can't buy your thing. Duke's not comparable. The comparable is, would Utah do it? Right, the comparable is would San Diego State do it?
Yeah, that was another program I thought about, right? Or like New Mexico State, you know, sure. UNLV.
New Mexico, yeah, State, I think you mean New Mexico. Right?
Yes, I knew, yeah, you definitely meant the Lobos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, maybe UNLV, San Diego State, you know, the Lobos, whatever.
Yeah, San Diego State's weird because obviously Southern California's a way bigger,
you know. Yeah, but UNLV, I think, is a good example.
No, UNLV could be be a good one. But here's the thing. The fact that there's no precedent doesn't mean people didn't choose to do it, right? That just means nobody executed it. Or there's rarely an occasion where you've got top 100 guys on the same high school team who happen to be that connected to university. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, it is weird to lift three guys off the same high school team. Now, it was one of the best high school teams of the past 20 years, right? It's that's what people said at the time, that it was an elite team. But still, it's weird. I get it. I just think you have to take that shot. I don't.
But the big programs aren't even going into AAU programs and pulling the same three guys off of an AAU squad.
That's true. I agree with that. I'm just not saying, but you're acting as if that's a strategy that they don't do that. I'm not. I'm saying I don't see that there's any evidence that people aren't doing that on purpose, right? If you told me that that LeBron James and I forget whoever else got recruited that year that he went pro, had gone to college, and the two other guys, best guys on his AAU team, had also been top guys, and you're saying Roy Williams would not have recruited all three of them, right, is your argument. Roy Williams would have recruited LeBron James and let the other two go.
Yeah, I don't know, right, because I don't follow Roy Williams recruiting enough.
Fine, not Roy Williams. Pick any coach.
Right, but I think my point is, like, I understand that my argument has some weakness to it. I understand that, right? Because for all I know, Roy Williams has done that and just not executed it, like you're saying. The right combination hasn't existed, and that's why there's no precedent, right? So I understand there's other reasons that this premise might be correct, that teams have not successfully pulled two or three guys from the same high school age squad and made a deep run with it. But I don't know. Like, if I were Rose in that case, I get it. I know. Like, if you don't land those guys, it's a disaster, and everybody's calling for your head. Whether especially if you don't make a tournament run. Like, if you had these last several runs with that same record, and you had not landed those recruits, that would be brutal. Be brutal, right?
Well, and the other part is, what's your alternative, right? So you lose out on, let's just make it up, right? And pick two of the three you don't recruit, okay? So let's say you just recruit Mika, all right? I'm just picking one because he was the highest ranked of those guys, right? You look at and you say, okay, Mika's was the best. We're going to go after Mika, and we let those other two go. The problem is, who comes in and who do you recruit in their place, right? If you don't get TJ Haas and Nick Emery, do you get somebody better collegially? I don't mean from the rankings, right? Because likely you weren't getting somebody ranked higher. And the answer is, look around. Are there LDS basketball players or BYU basketball players who've gone to other programs and had better careers over this time period? There are a couple, but not a lot. So it becomes like, what's the alternative? I think the alternative that we're missing right now is BYU's complete and total lack of foreign recruiting. And that's going to change. There are a couple guys coming in. But over this time period, there's nobody. The WCC teams and other teams that are having success that have limitations similar to BYU's are going outside of that typical range of recruiting. Right, and BYU, Rose and his staff, for whatever reason, over the last several years, have not executed successfully on that strategy. Right, so you get Mika, and what would you have built around him? I don't know. It's tough.
Well, and I think the other thing that proves out that's important to be successful at this level is there's a level of continuity that you need to have, and so you need juniors. You need juniors and seniors, and you need juniors and seniors who've been starting for 2 or 3 years. Everybody was all excited about Duke and their deep run. Duke's top four leading scorers were all freshmen. I think part of that inexperience is part of what finally caught up to them at the end. You know, and you look at the teams that are in the Final Four. I mean, even with Texas Tech, I feel like doesn't even belong on that list, right? But those guys have experience. You know, they got to the Elite Eight last year, right?
Right.
And so they've been through this rodeo at least once before. You know, you look, you know, Michigan State's heavy on upperclassmen. So that's the other piece of it too, is you've got to bring the guys in, but you've got to get them to stay. You need players that have been playing together for a long time. And maybe that's part of the reason you do try and bring three guys out of Lone Peak High School in. But, you know, we never really got – we didn't get them all on the floor together for 2 or 3 years, and definitely not in a row.
Right.
You know, but that's the other thing too here that's really painful for BYU, and some of it plays out in the way that the Lone Peak 3 kind of panned out. Is that players have got to stay. You've got to get guys to stay. At a place like BYU, if you want to make a run, you've got to be upperclassmen heavy with the best players you can recruit.
Yeah, yeah. Especially for a school like BYU. I am going to disagree with you a little bit about the whole Duke thing. They just got beat by a good team. If all those guys stayed, would they be better or whatever? Yeah, sure. You know, but the Fab Five went deep with freshmen. Carmelo Anthony's team in that 2002-2003 deep run. I mean, it was Warwick, it was McNamara, it was Anthony. I mean, and they were two freshmen and a sophomore. Duke got beat because Michigan State's a good team, right? And we all like to. It's time for an Adam rant here.
Okay.
All this like hatred against Duke is really bothering me, right? Krzyzewski is, we're watching John Wooden and we're sitting here complaining about it, right? Or reveling when he loses, right? And Zion, I wanted him to keep going because I like watching that guy play college hoops, right? Like, if you didn't get excited about the way he played the other night, like, I don't think you even like college basketball, right? Like, man, was that exciting. But Michigan State's a good team, right? Like, they were number two seed, and Duke was not an invincible team. They were a very good one, but they weren't some juggernaut, right? And they got beat by a good team. And the four teams you look at that are left, like you said, they're experienced teams, and I think that's an advantage. But I don't know that it trumps everything else, right? For BYU, though, you're 100% correct. You're not going to have a Zion Williamson, so you're going to have a team that's got some experience on it, and that's what happened in Jimmer's run, right? They had experienced people and some good underclassmen, but they had experienced people in that run the last couple of years that Jimmer was there, right? And that's how BYU is going to have to run, right? They're going to have to, and they've been absolutely hammered because people have left early, and therefore you lose that element, right? Speaking of leaving early, by the way, before I do that, what do you think about my take on Duke? Like, the whole thing with like people being excited about Duke getting knocked out is weird to me. Unless you're like a Tar Heel fan, right? Then I totally get it, right? But these people that like have no dog in that fight, but they're excited about Krzyzewski losing. I don't know. I just it's weird to me. I don't understand why you care.
You know, in a sport where I feel like there are plenty of bad guys, I don't see Coach K as a bad guy.
Right, right. I mean, he was not excited about winning against UCF. It's the first post-game interview I've ever seen where the guy looked like he was about to cry out of sadness for winning.
Right.
Because he beat one of his protégés.
And that protégé's son, who he cared for, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You know, but Coach K is not a bad guy, and Duke, you know, people talk. A guy at work today was like, "Oh, well, I'm so sick of these teams with the one and done, blah blah blah." Listen, don't hate the player; you got to hate the game. Duke is playing the system the way it's supposed to be played. Like, they're willing to let these guys come in that clearly have no intention of graduating, and they're going to come in and play for a year and try and make the step to the next level. That's the way the system is set up, and they're in a position to take advantage of that. Now, BYU, on the other hand, is not, for a variety of reasons.
Right.
You know, you've got to be a top-tier program that regularly makes deep runs to if you're going to attract that type of talent on a regular basis, and plus all the other regular BYU stuff. So you know, but for as a BYU fan or as a fan from some other program to look at that and think that, oh, well, Krzyzewski and these guys are ruining college basketball. Like that's, I think that's crazy. But, you know, I like to watch the best people playing at the best level against each other.
Yes.
And I think that's if you look at what we got here, and they did a pretty good job with the seeding this year. That's what we got in this tournament. And we had to, and Duke played some really close games. People played them really close. You know, is this the Final Four that I had in my bracket? No. My biggest disappointment with Duke losing is that I had them winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and so I'm potentially out some type of money if I'm into playing brackets for money.
Which but, clearly you're not.
I mean, who does that? So, I'm with you. I think the hate for Duke is a little bit overplayed. But it's like we've talked about this with, and I don't hate to bring up the Patriots, but this
but
happens
you're going
all the time. Anytime a team is good or a coach is good or a player is good for a long period of time, people get into this thing in their head that they're sick of it. And I'm putting air quotes around that because I think it's baloney. Like, what are you sick of? You're sick of watching somebody do something well?
It's weird. It really is weird. And again, if you're a rival, I get it. I'm not arguing against Tar Heel fans, though I do find it. I did have a buddy on social media say go green, and he's a Tar Heel fan, you know, and all this stuff. And I just put in the comments, I'm like, how far did North Carolina get this year?
Ouch.
Did they make the Final Four? Did I miss that? Right, like so, I you know, but that's rivals, right? I totally get it with the rivals, right? If you're a Jets fan, you're gonna hate the Patriots whether they're good or bad, right? But I'm with you. You watch some really good team, you know, be at the height or a coach at the height of their game, and to me, what's happening with the Patriots, what Krzyzewski has done. There's a few other examples you could pick. Those are things that 20 years from now will still be talked about, right? And that's amazing to me that people get too worked up about or they're sick, quote unquote, of watching the same people be good. When in most cases it's not the case, right? Duke doesn't win the national championship every year. They didn't win it this year, right? It's really hard to win a college basketball national championship because of the way the tournament's played. You don't have to be the best team. You just have to not lose a game over a couple of weekends, right?
I mean, if the NCAA tournament were set up the way the WCC tournament is, Duke's chances would be much greater.
Right. Or, I don't know if you've seen this, but Daryl Morey of the general manager for the Houston Rockets, he thinks the NBA playoffs should be more like the NCAA tournament. Shorter series, early round one and dones type of thing.
That'd be awesome.
It'd make for exciting television. But he pointed out that I don't know if this is true, but I heard this him say it on a Freakonomics podcast that the NCAA tournament gets more money, it has a bigger contract than the NBA's TV contract. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Well, it's a lot. I don't know. I'd have to think about number of games. I guess there's a couple different ways you could measure that.
No, it's total dollar amount. And what he's saying is way more games for the NBA, and yet the NCAA gets more total money. Now, they have to split it among more teams. I get all that.
And zero players.
But his point was having more doesn't actually equate to more, right? Because scarcity can create excitement. But anyway.
So sometimes more isn't more.
That's right. Speaking of leaving early... long-time listener Craig Dixon says on Twitter, I believe it's been established that a correlation exists between BYU basketball stars getting married and then leaving school early. Mika Bryant Childs. Do you think there's a causation going on here as well? Jimmer stayed all 4 years, then got married in 2012. And he emailed us and also told us he's a long-time listener, BYU grad, grew up with two brothers who also went to the Y, and all quote the Princess Bride and the Three Amigos regularly. Safe to say, I'm the primary demographic for the show.
Is this one of our brothers? I mean, we have a lot of brothers, so I could be confused. But what he just described, I feel like this could be somebody from our family.
It possibly could. And the Three Amigos is terrific. What I love that he's bringing up the Three Amigos because I quote that on the podcast all the time without ever referencing and saying that it was the Three Amigos.
Well, and he's clearly caught those references.
Yes, clearly has. Would you say I've used a plethora of Three Amigos references?
Oh my gosh.
A plethora, Efe?
Yes.
Yes, a plethora. Are you telling me that I have a plethora of piñatas, but you do not know what a plethora is? Anyway, so Matt, are you buying or selling guys get married so therefore they leave early?
I'm selling it.
I am also selling
I think it's just coincidence. Players at BYU get married at weird times. I don't mean players in the social sense. I just mean basketball players. But players do too. I don't know.
You mean that AT&T commercial that we kept seeing over and over during the tournament? Could you tell us a story about your days as a player? I hardly think that's appropriate, Jim. So Matt, you're selling. I am also selling.
The sample size isn't big enough, and we're only thinking about married players who left early. There have been plenty of guys who've played basketball at BYU, got married while they were in school and stayed. I don't know.
It is weird that all these guys have left
school early. I did want to get graduated as quickly as possible, though, so I could get a job. But
I didn't get married till after I graduated.
That's
so
probably true. Whether or not I got married, that was still true. I was ready to be done with school.
Yeah, you were ready to be done. Well, Matt, let's talk about the next coach. According to the Salt Lake Tribune and others, Alex Jensen, the Utah Jazz assistant, interviewed over the weekend for the top spot. But according to almost every news report I'm reading, Dick Armin, Jay Drew, and others are saying that Mark Pope is the target for the BYU Cougars, which would break a precedence. Dick Armin wrote about that this week, that historically BYU has recruited their coaches from either their own assistants or from like junior college and other places, not coaches with Division I basketball coaching experience. So Pope would be a slight exception to that, though of course he was a former assistant. Matt, is this a foregone conclusion that Pope is the number one target based on all the chatter we're getting at BYU? That doesn't mean he'll come, right? Because he can choose not to, but do you think?
Yeah,
Pope's the guy?
I don't know. I mean, so when was it? When did? What day was it that Rose announced?
Last Tuesday, Monday. So it's been a week.
So then, but I guess, well, maybe if the first interview they had, we're assuming that this was the first interview they had, was with Jensen on Saturday. Did they reach out to Pope first? I don't know. I think it's tough to tell. I mean, the chatter definitely tells you the Pope's the main guy, but he's also the fan favorite of everybody on the list. We know where I stand on it. I'd like to see Pope be the guy who gets hired. Is he in the eyes of the administration? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm ambivalent whether it's him or some of these other guys. He's done a good job at Utah Valley, so certainly that gives a lot of credence there. Whether he'd be able to come in and, you know, really recruit like we've been talking about and kind of turn things around, I just don't know, right? Because doing what he's done at Utah Valley and coming and doing something even, different at BYU, I don't know. I don't know how well those correlate. But it's probably he's a safer bet than Alex Jensen, Mark Madsen, or these other folks without Division I coaching experience. But as Harmon pointed out earlier this week in the Des News, BYU has not historically in any sport gone after, in any of the major sports, gone after people with head coaching experience, right? Lavelle Edwards, Gary Croton,
Bronco
Mendenhall,
Dave Rose,
not at the Division I level, right? Rose had it at Dixie and high school, if I'm remembering right, and obviously Steve Cleveland had done that at the junior college level. But it's interesting, and so Pope would break a trend from prior hires. So we'll see. Matt, let's finish talking about football here. We got a couple of topics there. One is a Facebook question from Dr. Nicholas Nelson. He says, other than Jay Swag Daddy, who did it twice, BYU hasn't had a 1,000-yard running back in the past decade, and this year's group doesn't seem likely to have one either. Is this indicative of a problem recruiting future running backs, recruiting and or developing offensive linemen, poor offensive schemes by the coaches, or some combination of all three? Wasn't Grimes supposed to fix all of this? Matt, what's the problem, and why can't BYU develop more 1,000-yard running backs?
Okay, first thing is, and I know he's not going to like me responding to it this way, but I think you're overselling it when you say that in the past decade, except for those 2 years that this did happen, we didn't have a running back who go break over 1,000 yards, right? So what you're trying to get after this time frame that carries some weight, but you're removing 20% of it. Anyway, so I think that makes it sound worse than it is. Do I think it's indicative of a problem recruiting future running backs? You're probably going to pull out some statistic on how many 1,000-yard running backs we've had in the history of the program. If I know you well, you probably have that in front of you in some spreadsheet. Maybe you don't. Maybe this will be the one time I'm expecting
you to. You are correct. Well, okay. Well played, sir.
So you're going to come out with that in just a second, and you're going to kind of you're going to give some context around this. But so just me, just completely anecdotally, I think what I'll say is I think that historically, how many feature running backs have we had? Like, who would you call like real feature running backs, right? In the past 20 years. Like, there just isn't always one, and that's been true at BYU for a long time. Now, I think we have had a problem recruiting, developing offensive linemen. I think that's true, partially because we've changed our identity so many times over a certain stretch. You know, we went over 3 or 4 years, we had 3 or 4 different offensive coordinators and all this, and so you get kind of recruiting set up and offensive linemen set up to do the go fast, go hard, and then you're switching back and forth. So I think there's been a lot of that has played into all this. Poor offensive scheming by the coaches. I don't know. I'm ready to blame it on that. Maybe some combination of all three. And I don't think Grimes has had enough time to fix all of this. Anyway, that's my long rant in response to the question. Why don't you go ahead and hit us with some stats?
All right. So in BYU history, there have been 14 seasons in which a running back has rushed for 1,000 or more yards. Okay. So in the 90s, there were three such seasons, and two of them were by Jamal Williams and then your boy, Brian McKenzie. I'm sorry, four. Ronnie Jenkins did it as well. I mean, 98 was kind of an interesting season. So you had four in the 90s. You had Van Valkenburg in the 70s, Forte in the 60s once, right? And, you know, in the aughts, you had Staley and you had Unga, you had Curtis Brown, Unga a couple times, Curtis Brown a couple times. Here's the deal. Some of this is arbitrary in that it depends on the talent on the roster, right? You look at Leke Haimuli, who was a great running back in the 80s. He never rushed for 1,000 yards, right? He got in the 900s, but he never broke that arbitrary line of 1,000. I don't think anyone during those times was thinking we had a running back problem. You know, Brian McKenzie in 96 ran for 950 yards, right? But averaged almost 6 yards per carry. But again, he was splitting.
By the end of that season, he was splitting a lot of time with Ronnie Jenkins.
That's my point, is that some of these years, over the last few years, have been what you described. There's just been some offensive issues. There's also been injuries. Squally Cannon, I think, goes for over 1,000 the year before last, if he doesn't miss some time, right? So there's a lot of circumstances here. I agree with Dr. Nick that there's not likely going to be a 1,000-yard runner on this roster. I think Katoa's the best bet. But I think having a feature back is not that common, to your point. You know, having a Jamal, I mean, Jamal did it, it ran for over 1,000 yards twice, three times? Just twice. I mean, heck, Taysom Hill ran for 1,000 yards once, too. You know, and that was the only year I think we've had 2,000-yard runners, right? Is 2013 in BYU history? I think that's true. But anyway, I'm not worried about the 1,000-yard mark. I just want them to be a good offense. Right? I don't care how the offense gets done. If it's four running backs that are being used in different ways and a running quarterback or not, or they throw the ball 60 times a game and we score points and move the ball, then I don't care. Right?
Well, and then there's a lot of programs doing that now.
Sure.
You know, where they're sharing carries.
Yeah, yeah. Running back by committee, keeping the guy fresh. Let's move to quarterback for a second. Lawless Republic had an article, and you and I kind of hinted at this during some of the spring drills. Is there really a quarterback battle for the starting position, Matt? Obviously, everyone, we talked about Hall earlier and his amazing athleticism. He showed that in the spring scrimmage and looked really good both throwing the football as well as running the football. So, Matt, buy or sell, because today is all about buy or sell, apparently. Buy or sell a actual quarterback battle happening in fall camp for the number one spot.
My response to this should come as a surprise to you because we've talked around this a bunch.
Yeah, we have.
I'm gonna go ahead and flip flop and buy this.
Oh my gosh, you're such a flip flopper. I'm gonna sell it.
Whoa! You're selling this?
I've always been selling it. I've just thought. I think my argument has been I don't think there's a massive drop between Wilson and Hall. Okay, that's been my argument. Right. Not that Hall was gonna beat him out to be the starter, right? I just think if Wilson were to get hurt, we're not going to see this massive drop-off in quarterback play. I think you'll see some because he doesn't have experience, but I think Hall could quickly, based on his athleticism and what we've seen, could quickly come up to speed and give a similar level to Zach Wilson. And that's not a knock on Zach Wilson, right? That's more of a compliment to Hall than it is a knock on Wilson. I will say this, though. It is very rare, unless your name is Nick Saban, to take an incumbent starter who's played as well as Wilson has and make them fight for a starting job in fall camp. It's
right.
Not that
Tanner
common.
Mangum.
It's not that common, right?
But Tanner's experience was a little bit weirder. I'll
but
give
did
you
he
that.
Though? Did was there really a competition, or did Tanner? You know what I mean? He won, right? And the question of
I'm talking about Tanner having to sit for Taysom's return.
Oh, yeah. Not last year. You're not talking about last year.
No, last year we got out of fall camp with Tanner being the man, and then over the course of the season, that's where that changed.
Yeah.
But I think that the coaches headed into spring ball with the same attitude that you're describing. I think they didn't see a big, huge drop-off between the two, but I think Hall has played himself into a legitimate shot.
Okay, that's fair. And that's kind of the argument that they made in the Lawless Republic article. Switching to the other side of the ball, defensive backs, in the Daily Herald, there was an interview with Gennaro Guilford, who's the defensive back coach, that he's expecting a lot from his unit, and it's a lot of coach speak in there, but there were a couple of things in there that I thought were worth discussing. But mainly, Matt, is this: he is seeing this advantage of, because of injury, some young guys getting a lot of reps in spring ball, and he thinks that's helpful because if they get called upon in the fall to play because of injury or whatever else. Matt, we've been talking about this, and maybe Guilford and some of the other coaches are should be given a bunch of credit for this, but I am I'm a little worried about how not nervous I am about our defensive backfield going into the fall.
Yeah, why are you not nervous about our defensive backfield going into the fall?
I'm not worried about them at all. That's the position group, besides tight end, where I have probably the least amount of concern. And that includes quarterback. We're deep. We got two JC transfers to add to already a solid group who played really well last year. I love our defensive backfield. I love the coaching of them. And I think they are – everyone hates on defensive backs because they end up giving up big plays even when they're good, right? Because you can't cover somebody forever. But I'm not worried about that group. You're worried about that group. I thought you were worried about the linebackers.
I'm worried about all of it.
You worried about all of it? Oh, you're a worrier. Stop worrying so much, worrier man.
You know, but while I do think that what Guilford has in this article, I mean, it is a lot of coach speak, right? You got to keep your players motivated. I do. We've got depth, and we've got some. Experienced players in terms of getting JC guys in. I'll give you that. But in terms of guys who've played in this system and have a lot of playing time, trying to go deep with that type of description is where I start to get a little more nervous.
You have Gunwalaku.
Yeah, I'm talking about. Okay, but let's go deeper than that.
Okay. Go deeper than that. Let's talk about all of them. Who we got?
Okay, so I'll take Gunwalaku. You're right. Okay. Older player has been in the system and has been around.
Troy Warner. I mean, we got injury issues, but
right. So inconsistent experience is what I'll call that. Kafensis has been, here's another senior, but he's been splitting time on sides of the ball.
Okay.
Austin Lee, I actually feel pretty good about Austin Lee.
Yeah, Austin Lee's great.
But now I'm out of guys that have played meaningful minutes in a BYU uniform.
So what? They don't have to have played. These guys from JC don't have to play. Why does it make you nervous? There's new guys every year. It's college football. You rarely have a position group, especially one as big as defensive back or linebacker, where everybody comes back with experience. That seems like a pretty ridiculous expectation, right? That happens at running back or quarterback because there's just fewer people that play, right? But, I mean, I look at this group and I mean, it's not as if I'm saying we got three All-Americans back there or something, but I'm not that worried about this group. I think they're athletic. I think they're big. I think they're fast. And I think we'll be, like we have the last couple of years, playing, when we can, playing press coverage and doing fun things with the defensive backfield that we, you know, historically have really struggled to do. So I'm excited. And you're not going to temper my enthusiasm. How's that?
All right, I'll leave you alone.
Yeah, but you're nervous. But more or less nervous about the linebackers.
I'm probably more nervous about the linebackers.
More or less nervous than on the defensive line?
More nervous about defensive back than defensive line.
Okay. All right. Fair. All right. Fair enough. I think I'm feeling you here. Disagree a little bit, but I get where you're coming from. Last one, Matt. Kicker. Obviously, Oldroyd back from his mission. Southam having kicked for a year. You've got two experienced kickers who both... Well, I guess Oldroyd didn't kick for a full year because he got hurt. Buy or sell Oldroyd as the favorite going into fall camp based on spring results?
I'm selling that.
I'm selling that too. Southam's the guy. So let's slow the roll on that one, all right? Because of a couple of kicks in the spring practice, right? Now, if that happens all throughout fall camp, that Oldroyd is more consistent, then sure, right? But I'm not gonna base it on one scrimmage, right?
And do I think because of history and all that, does Southam feel Oldroyd breathing down his neck?
Oh, sure.
For a shot all season long? Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I think Southam's going to have to, I mean, if Southam folds and plays terribly, then you've got another guy and they'll go to the other guy. I mean, this isn't quarterback, right? Where you're worried about ruining your kicker, right? I don't think coaches think of it that way. If the guy's not performing, they think they have another guy, they bring him up. Typically, though,
the hook.
You don't have another guy in college, right? That's your guy. You got the one guy, right? And you got the punter.
Here's a position where I'm excited about the depth.
More comfortable, less comfortable with the kicker depth than your defensive back. More comfortable.
I'm gonna go more comfortable.
More comfortable. You love kickers. That's well documented.
Once pretended to be a third-string kicker.
That's right. That's right. Well, Matt, we're going to thank everybody for listening. We did have that's right. You did in college, didn't you?
I'm just going to ignore that I even brought that up. I'm going to blame the cold medicine for even mentioning this.
Yeah, that's right. Craig Dixon did mention he is now one of our patrons. You can support the show at patreon.com/RiceShout. Welcome aboard. Climb on in there, Craig. So, why ruin it with your creepy, weird voice.
Because I got the creepy whispers.
You got the creepy whispers in your Hard Rock Bottom.
Hard Rock Bottom.
All right. So, well, thanks,
everybody. And actually, can I give a quick shout out to, you know, we get tweet questions from, I don't remember what it is. We get Facebook questions from Darwin. A guy named Darwin in California every now and again. I think that's where he really likes the Hot Rock Bottom hashtag, but he completed his first marathon last weekend in Los Angeles. So shout out to Darwin.
Shout out to Darwin and a Hot Rock Bottom for you, buddy.
Hot Rock Bottom. I'm sure he felt like he had Hot Rock Bottom when he got to the end of those 26.2 miles. Sounded extremely painful, Darwin. Way to go.
I don't know what that means, and I think we should just move on. But thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Next week, or the week after, we will not be on one of these 2 weeks. So stay tuned. It's still in flux.
We just like to keep you guessing.
Keep you guessing. Don't want it to get stale.
Like the Alliance of American Football. We might be here next week. We might not be.
We might not. That's right. That's right. Thanks, everybody, once again, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!